T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Sports Radio 99, the game. Chuck Reed always gets the first request for the Brown Liquor Music Hour. Little Al B. Sure, Night and Day. What year was this song? Late 80s? 88, 89? Wow. Sing it, Al. Give us a little bit. How smooth is this bad boy right here? Wow. If you're in the car right now, you got to be enjoying all this. Sorry. Yeah, I know we're not a music station. We're a sports talk radio station. 88, huh? Yeah. Good stuff. Streaming online, go to 929thegame.com. You can catch all the replays of our shows, listen to us live, interviews, everything up there on a new and improved website, 929thegame.com. Download your radio.com app. Put that on your phone, your tablet, your boombox, turntable, Sega Genesis, Commodore 64, whatever device that you got, stick it on there. That way you can always listen to us on the go. All of the social media for the station, it's at 929thegame, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Follow along, like us, talk to us, interact with us, do what you got to do. It's all at 929thegame. Best way to interact with this particular show, as always, it is through my Twitter handle. That is at JMCH316, at JMCH316. Jarvis is in the house, by the way. All your water cooler talking points 3 to 6 months in advance of anybody else. DJ JYD in the house. Jarvis behind the glass tonight playing all the hits. You can follow him on Twitter. He is at JarvisD90. Let's get to our NFL no huddle. So let's start first with this story about the New Orleans Saints, where obviously, Drew Brees is going to turn 40 years old coming up, or he just did turn 40 in January. So, obviously, questions about how long he's going to play. General manager Mickey Loomis, during an appearance on Mad Dog Sports Radio, said that Brees has, quote-unquote, already exceeded whatever number was anticipated when he began his career and indicated the team is no longer taking a long view of how much time Brees has left. Loomis also, through the New Orleans Advocate, said, quote, you know, I don't think we look at it that way anymore. I think we look at it in terms of, hey, this year, you know? And, man, he has a great season last year, and we expect a great season this year. And so for as long as he wants to play and can play, he's going to have that opportunity. Now, obviously, the problem has been, when you're talking about this, is handling all the money aspect of it. Because they've moved money around and pushed it back and all these different things that are out there to try to keep Drew Brees around and pay him at the same time. Problem is, at some point, that check is going to come due. Like, at some point, you eat the meal and you have a drink and smoke a stogie, and now it's finally time to settle up on the bill. And when it comes, you got to pull the credit card out and pay for it or go wash dishes. That credit card payment is going to be due here soon for Drew Brees. That's where the problem has been, is they've kicked the can down the road on a lot of money with him, deferring it. They almost need him to play for another year or two to just help them out from a salary cap and financial perspective to where they can spread money out that they owed him. I don't feel bad for them. Screw them. That's a them problem for it, but that's what's happened. And I don't know, maybe Brees has a couple of more years. Maybe he decides he's had enough. You know, right now he's in the middle of that trial, that jewelry case fraud trial or whatever like that that's going on out there. So he's got a lot of activity going on with all that. He's got stuff going on that he's got going there. So, you know, at this point, look, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the history of the league, one of the top quarterbacks still in the game, no question about it. But, yeah, the end of the rope is coming very near for Drew Brees. So the Rams are in no hurry, it appears, to give an extension to head coach Sean McVay. Now, of course, he's coming off of the Super Bowl. And it says here, over the next 3 years, McVay has a deal that is believed to only pay him about $4 million per year. And it says the Rams are seeming to be willing to enjoy that bargain, at least for now, via Gary Klein. And Gary's a good reporter. I've actually interviewed Gary and had him on back when he covered Southern Cal. Actually, he used to be the Southern Cal, University of Southern Cal beat writer. Was a lot of good-looking news girls and went to Southern Cal. Why does it always go back to Southern Cal, Jarvis? Why does everything always tie back into Southern Cal? I mean, I'm reading Gary Klein, and he was, yeah, it's just so many good-looking news girls. Anyway, Rams COO Kevin DeMoff recently said that the team will be focusing for now on contracts for the guys who are on the field, explaining that he's, quote-unquote, making sure the players we need to extend are done. Now, obviously, Sean McVay is one of the most popular, now respected, youngest. You know, he's up the top tier of coaches, having made a Super Bowl appearance. Demoff continued to say, becoming a face of the team in Los Angeles and really becoming one of the faces in the NFL is everything you hope when you go into the head coaching process, not just to find a great coach, but to find an amazing leader and steward for our franchise. As you go to make sure that your core players are here for a long time, obviously the goal is to make sure the coaching staff is here a long time. Our goal is always to make sure this group can stay together for as long as possible. Well, that kind of means you probably need to extend him and pay him, though, right? You know, I mean, you want to keep him happy and want him to be there and focused. You know, yeah, I mean, it's not like there's any salary cap for the coaches. And so far, it's been a great investment, and there's no denying that he is one of the hot, young, up-and-coming coaches. Yes, he's got the Super Bowl already appearance. Had a chance to win it, but like Tom Brady always does, snatch victory from the jaws of defeat with it. So, but there's no doubt that, okay, get Donald or get Goff or get whatever they got to get done, get right. McVay's a big cog in all that. There's a reason why Jared Goff has taken some of the steps forward that he has. I think a lot of that has to do with McVay. Because you can tell me about all the great players that they have. That franchise goes as far as Jared Goff can take them. You know, they had Todd Gurley before Jared Goff could play, and they were no good. They had Aaron Donald years before Jared Goff was there, and they were no good. Aaron Donald was great. Gurley was great. They weren't great as a team, though. So they've had great players like that. Until their quarterback could figure it out, they weren't a great team. Speaking of the Rams and Todd Gurley, as we go through our NFL No Huddle, Todd Gurley's trainer confirms that there is, quote-unquote, an arthritic component to his knee. Gurley's personal trainer, Travell Gaines, told Dave Richard of CBSSports.com that the knee issue was real, but insisted it shouldn't bother him this season. Quote, everybody knew when Todd came out of Georgia that there would be some kind of arthritic component to his knee, which is part of every surgery, whether it's a shoulder, a knee, an ankle. He's now at the 5-year mark. All we're doing is managing that. We can pound him less in the offseason while keeping his weight down, working on his strength, working on his agility in short areas. That's going to give him a better chance to be healthy weeks 14 through 17 when they really count. Now, remember, we gave you the story a few weeks ago about how Todd Gurley was trying to lose 7 or 8 pounds and get down in some weight, take some pressure off that frame, take some pressure off that knee. And the idea is that, truthfully, he's not the bell cow running back that can just lead your franchise, you know, game in, game. It's a shame, but this is the reality of when you draft a running back like that and what can happen to that running back long term. No doubt when Gurley is healthy and at his peak, he's as good a running back as there is in the league. The problem is that you get that in very short, small bursts. You don't get that enough times and enough points during the year to where you feel like you can trust the franchise. And they gave him a crap ton of money, okay? He's got a crap ton of money that's owed to him. He's not going anywhere because he's got a crap ton of money attached to it. So he's going to be a Ram for a while. What they've got to do is figure out the best way to use him. And don't forget, they did add Darrell Henderson, a third-round running back as well. So I'm sure Gurley will try to use him, you know, as they need to, but also, what's our new term? Load management? Yeah, he's definitely going to be one of those guys that you talk about for load management. Chuck Green, the Key Studios on Sports Radio 910 The Game as we're going through our NFL no huddle. So, according to a report, Pat Bowlen, and we talked about this the other day when he passed, there is a succession plan for what to do with the team. So, Broncos CEO and team president Joe Ellis said that Bowlen left plans in place to cover the future of the team. Quote from Ellis, "I don't want to talk too much about it other than to say Pat was prepared for this day. He put a plan in place. It was his plan. As a trustee, it's my obligation and our obligation with my other two fellow trustees to carry out the plan. My role, which he assigned and talked to me about and asked me to take on, is to be what is known as the controlling owner delegee. Not just CEO and president, but to be here to represent him until a child is ready to take over. That's what the plan is, and I'm going to follow through on that and honor him. I know there's some stuff out there that may be concerning to fans. Everybody here knows what Pat wants and what he's all about. Outside of winning games, which is very hard to do in this league, everything else is, in my opinion, easily achievable, and we're going to continue to do that and great things in the community and obviously try to get better on the field, and I'm optimistic about what John has done in the offseason." Talking about John Elway, of course. So there has been dispute among family members who will take control. Beth Bowlen Wallace, an older daughter from his first marriage, said last year she's ready to take over. The trustees responded with a statement that said, quote-unquote, "She was not capable or qualified at this time." The preference appears to be 29-year-old Brittany Bowlen, a daughter from his second wife, Annabelle. She's returning to work for the team after previous experience in the league office. The dispute is currently in league arbitration with Carmen Policy. Remember him, the guy, the executive from the 49ers? Overseeing, and he was actually the first guy for the Browns, too. That's who Al Lerner brought in for the Browns franchise to run the Browns franchise for, like, you know, for football operations or what have you. And then Dwight Clark was a GM and all that. One person that we know is not going to own any part of the team is John Elway. John Elway said, "Nope. Number one, I don't have the money. I wish I did. I wish that wasn't an issue. It's a different galaxy. I'm happy with where I am. I'm proud to work for the organization and opportunity they provide. So we'll continue to work our tail off. Look forward to this season. The ownership will play itself out. That's obviously been talked about for a long, long time. And there's a transition plan that Pat put together, and I'm sure Joe will execute it the way Pat wanted it." So that was something that Jarvis and I brought up a few weeks ago was, okay, what's going to happen and how are they going to fix this and how are they going to go about trying to transition this team? Well, it looks like they have it in place. How about being 29 years old, by the way, and you may very shortly be taking over an NFL football team as an owner? Does that make you feel like whatever we did, Jarvis, we didn't do it the right way? Whatever we did, we didn't do it right. Ah, yes. Yes. Oh, I love Keith Sweat, man. Is he still living in Atlanta? He's still an Atlanta guy? Yeah. Yeah, love Keith Sweat. Brown Liquor Music Hour rolls right along. Coming up next, is this the best, most productive infield in Atlanta Braves history? Yeah, I said that right. I'm going to give you the projections and the numbers, and we'll look back in time. Chuck Green, the Key Studios, smooth on the tip. Sports Radio, 910 on the Game. An underrated group here. Tony. It's your anniversary. These guys are underrated. I've seen these guys in concert before. They were part of like that Club MTV tour back in the day. Back when Feels Good was their song. Yeah. Little Tony getting it going. It is the Brown Liquor Music Hour. Kind of an 80s theme today so far. Yeah, a little 80s theme going for the Brown Liquor Music. That's all right. Ain't nothing wrong with that, man. Ain't nothing wrong. We're old school. I got you in every decade. Chuckery in the Kia Studios, by the way. 404-741-0929 is our phone line. Solomon Brothers Diamond text line as well. At JMCH316. If you want to follow along on Twitter, a few people have been jumping on tonight, so appreciate that. Yeah, it's been pretty ugly at the ballpark tonight. It's... Not been a good night for the for the home team thus far. So Mets tonight blowing out the Braves 10-0. Tehran wasn't good. Tukey wasn't good. Tomlin's not been good. You know what? Get all your bad looks out of the way. You know, DeGrom will probably pitch a complete game. He's got 8 innings, 3 hits, no earned runs, 10 strikeouts, and he hasn't walked a guy. And he's only thrown 101 pitches in 8 innings. So there you go. Is that good? 8 innings, 101 pitches, 10 strikeouts, 3 hits, no walks, no runs. Yeah, yeah. And it's been bombs away tonight. The Mets have hit a few home runs tonight. They've hit They've hit 3 home runs, I believe. Yeah, 3 home runs themselves tonight. So, look, you knew runs would be at a premium for the Braves because you had one of the best pitchers in the league in Jacob DeGrom pitching. But, it happens. You know, this is not one of those, you know, last night and tonight is not one of those 35 games that decide your season. That's one of those we win 60, we lose 60, and then we figure it out in between there. Speaking of figuring it out, so the Atlanta Braves infield, I was looking at some numbers in the projections of what these guys are on pace to do. Listen to what the numbers are this year for the infield. Freddie Freeman is on pace for 42 homers, 115 RBIs, hitting .313 with 122 runs scored and 40 doubles. Ozzie Albies, 24 homers, 87 RBIs, .286 batting average, 102 runs scores with 11 steals. Dansby, 29 homers, 95 RBIs, .261 batting average, 100 runs scored with 13 stolen bases. And Josh Donaldson, 27 homers, 73 RBIs, .255 batting average, 89 runs scored, 82 walks. Then combine the two catchers, and Tyler Flowers and Brian McCann are on pace to hit 29 homers with 95 RBIs and 66 runs scored. It looks like Freddie's going to get them on the board. Yep, there goes the shutout as he homers off DeGrom. So you've got every position on pace for 27 or more homers. You've got 3 of the spots that are on pace for 95 or more RBIs. And you've got 3 positions that are on track to score over 100 runs. And we've talked about where this team is. I mean, obviously becoming an offensive juggernaut. I mean, think about Ozzie Albies hitting 8th, and he has 24 homers and 87 RBIs if that's what he finishes with. That's one heck of a night. That's one heck of a season right there for a guy hitting 8th in your order. Now, I went back and did a little bit of research. Yes, Chuck, we went back in time and tried to find some numbers. Let me give you a few of the infields that are up there, but I would tell you that you can make a strong case. If this pattern holds true and this keeps going the way that it is, this might be the best offensive infield in the history of the Atlanta Braves organization. Let's start with 73, which is the big home run year for this club. They had 206 homers that year, led by 3 guys with 40 homers. So in the infield, Darrell Levens played 3rd, 114 runs scored, 41 homers, 104 RBIs. Davey Johnson had 43 homers and 99 RBIs. Mike Lum only played 138 games at first, but he had 16 homers and 82 RBIs. They were pretty lousy at catcher. They combined for 11 homers and 45 RBIs. And Marty Perez played short. He had 8 homers and 57 RBIs, scored 66 runs out there. So he had a couple of big boppers that were right in the middle of that order. Look at last year's offense in the infield. Suzuki and Tyler Flowers combined to hit 20 homers with 80 RBIs, and they scored 79 runs. Freddie had 23 homers, 98 RBIs, scored 95. Ozzie scored 105 runs with 40 doubles and 24 homers and 72 RBIs, 14 steals. Dansby had 14 homers and 59 RBIs. Camargo, he had 19 homers and 76 RBIs offensively for this team. Then we go back, let's go to 2011. BMAC, 24 homers, 71 RBIs. Freddie was 21 and 76. Ugla was 36 and 82 RBIs. Alex Gonzalez, of all people, 15 homers, 56 RBIs, and Chipper was 18 and 70. So you had all 5 guys in your infield that got at least 15 or more homers with 3 guys over 20. And Chipper was darn close that year. 2000, Javi Lopez, 24 homers, 89 RBIs. Andres Galarraga, 28 and 100. 36 and 111 for Chipper with a .311 batting average. Rafael Furcal, 87 runs, 4 homers, 37 RBIs, but he stole 40 bases. And second baseman Kilvio Varas that year, he only played in 84 games. Keith Lockhart played in 113 games. Him and Lockhart combined to have 7 homers and 69 RBIs, but they did score 88 runs. And Kilvio Varas had 25 stolen bases, and he hit .309 with a .413. Now, maybe what is the gold standard is the 2003 team, which, by the way, is the all-time leader. And by the way, DeGrom was just giving up another home run. Who hit that? Was that Donaldson that just homered for them off there? Is that Josh Donaldson? Josh Donaldson just homered. So Freddie and Donaldson go back-to-back, and now it's 10-2. And I don't know. I'm glad that they're scoring a couple of runs, at least screw DeGrom out of getting the shutout or what have you. So maybe he won't even get to pitch all 9 innings when it's all said and done. So 10-2 right now, back-to-back homers. The 2003 team seems to be the flag bearer. Remember, that's the great team with Chipper, Andrew, and Sheffield. They set the team record for home runs with 235. In the infield, Javi behind the plate hit 43 homers, 109 RBIs, hit .328. Robert Fick in 126 games had 11 homers and 80 RBIs that year, to go with 5 homers and 31 RBIs out of Julio Franco. Marcus Giles, remember him? 101 runs, 49 doubles, 21 homers, 69 RBIs, 14 steals, and hit .316 that year. Fuki Rafael Furcal, 130 runs scored. 35 doubles, 10 triples, 15 homers, 61 RBIs, 25 stolen bases to go with a .292 batting average. And Vinny Castilla, of all people, was the guy who played third base. You remember that year because Chipper played left. 22 homers, 76 RBIs for him. So you can see that if the numbers hold true for the Braves this year and what their infield is, this legitimately is going to be the most productive infield offensively in the history of the organization. And that's saying something because they've had some pretty good infields over the years and some pretty good combinations out there. It seems like everything numbers-wise keeps going back to 2003, whether it's team numbers, individual numbers, things like that. That year, the three outfielders, Chipper, Andrew, and Sheffield, had 102 homers and 350-something RBIs. Just a ridiculous amount of numbers that those guys put up. But it's a testament to how much productivity that they're getting out of everybody in that lineup. Freddie's having a career year. Dansby's having a career year. Ozzie Albies is having a career year, although, you know, he's only a rookie last year. But he's on pace to beat his numbers from last year. And Josh Donaldson, if he gets hot and continues to get hot, and, of course, he just homered just now. Trying to see what he was. He's 2-for-4 without running an RBI. So he's up to .255 now. And he's now got 13 homers, and he's up to 34 RBIs himself. So he could continue. If he continues to stay hot, his numbers over the end of the year are going to look much better. It wouldn't be a surprise that if this team had 3 guys at 30 homers in their infield, you got 3 guys that could hit 30 because Dansby's on pace for 29. Ozzie's at 24, and he's been swinging a hot bat. Donaldson's at 27, and that doesn't count tonight with his home run. Freddie's just on a torrid pace for home runs. So they could legitimately have 3 guys that hit 30 homers in the middle of the infield. That's a pretty stout number. That's good in any, I don't care what era of baseball. It could be the 2000s, the 1930s, or, you know, the 2019s. That's a pretty stout number if you can get 33 guys with 30-plus home runs. So, look, no doubt that this has been a very good infield. I think the underrated part of this infield, by the way, is how good defensively they are. Donaldson and Dansby on the left-hand side of the infield have been really good. Dansby's near gold glove caliber. Donaldson's very, very good with the glove. And Freddie's the other guy who just doesn't get enough love. His bat is so good and he's such a complete player that he doesn't get enough love for how good of a defensive player that he is. But Freddie can flash some leather. He's a very good defensive first baseman. And Ozzie's all right. I mean, Ozzie's not terrible. He's not Roberto Alomar out there or anything like that. But he's a pretty good defensive. That's a pretty good keystone combo they got with Dansby and Ozzie out there. That's a pretty good defensive unit. That infield all the way around, though, is a pretty good group to have. That's why I tell you, they've got a World Series lineup. They've got so many good things that are going on right now. Yeah, I know they're getting blown out tonight, but been so many good things that are going on for this team that's why you want to see them make whatever moves they have to make. That's why you want to see them do what they have to do to strengthen up their bullpen or whatever they feel like they have to do. We know they got to strengthen their bullpen, and we know they got to get the back end of their bullpen fixed. They have to fix the back end of their bullpen because they have everything else in place to be a World Series caliber team. Look, with the way that their offense can score 5 or 6 runs, you know, they've scored like 90 runs in their last 11 games. With the way that this team scores runs, if you can get just enough pitching, and I think with Soroka and Fried and hopefully Dallas Keuchel, and yeah, Tehran was bad tonight, but he's been outstanding in May and his first start in June. They can get just enough pitching to where they can keep it close for their offense to finally get that breakout, because it seems like their offense can get that breakout kind of moment. What this offense has to learn how to do, though, is how to make some hay against the better pitchers in the league. Because that's the guys you're going to see in the playoffs. You don't get to see the Miami Marlins pitching staff in the playoffs. It's the Dodgers with Ryu and Walker Buehler and Clayton Kershaw. Okay, it's those kinds of guys. You get to the World Series, and then you get Verlander, and you get Garrett Cole, or you get Chris Sale from Boston. You know, you get the best of the best that's out there. Oh. Wow. I may just lay down and just want to go to sleep and just relax and have a little drink. All right, when we get back, has the stigma of not wanting to draft Duke players in the NBA gone away? I've got some numbers in an ESPN article to try to help sort all this out. Chuck me in the Kia Studios, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Oh, yeah. But this is As, right? Isn't that what this song is? Oh, is it? Okay. Around the sun, the earth, those seas revolving. Chuck Green, the Key Studios on Sports Radio, 9 to the Game. Always love some Stevie Wonder. Hey, join 92.9 The Game. This coming Friday from Twin Peaks in Kennesaw. The Midday guys, Andy and Randy, they're going to be broadcasting live from 10 to 2. And Dukes and Bell. Who's going to be on Dukes and Bell today? Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm going to be there. And Jarvis will be there as well. Both of us going to be broadcasting there from 2 to 7. Stop by Twin Peaks in Kennesaw this Friday. Enjoy craveable man food like delicious burgers, wings, and sandwiches as the Twin Peaks girls serve you up the coldest beer. Yeah, this is As. Yes, great song. Always good stuff. Been a very good 80s kind of brown liquor music night tonight. Are you going to play some for Sammy tomorrow night? Sam Crenshaw in tomorrow night. You got to give Sam Crenshaw some brown liquor music, right? You know, I mean, if you get him and Gil Tyree and Fred Khalil together, you know, that's the Pips, right? That's the Pips. Like, that was my Atlanta, you know, sports TV guys back in the day. Back in the Buckhead, them Screets days. Sammy, Fred Khalil, and Gil Tyree. You get Sammy and Gil together, you will never lose a Barry White karaoke contest, I promise you. Not a chance in this world you can lose Barry White karaoke with those two guys on your side. 404-741-0929 is the phone line. At JMCH316 on Twitter. At JMCH on Twitter. Thank you to the people that have jumped on board and started following me tonight. So we know the Atlanta Hawks coming up Thursday in the NBA draft. There's at least two Duke players that they very much have their eyes on and have interest in. One is RJ Barrett, who I think is the guy that you get outside of Ja Morant and Zion. I think he's the next most logical pick in the draft. I think he's that clear-cut number three guy that once you get past Zion, then it starts to, or sorry, once you get past R.J. Barrett, you know, I think the talent pool drops off. And that includes Cam Reddish and all the guys. Cam Reddish is the other guy, though, that the Hawks have their eye on. There's a real possibility, because some people have said that, hey, listen, even if the Hawks get up to 4 or 5, they're going to take Cam Reddish. There's a real possibility that three Duke players could go again in the top 5. And the rep for Duke players in the NBA has never been really good. Now, that perception, I think, is changing a good bit. Hence this article from ESPN from Rachel Marcus, who ranking the colleges that produce the most potentially impactful NBA players. She looks at the last 10 years and says, which schools are producing the most impact players in the NBA? So they said the first pick of the draft gets 60 points, decrease in the last pick, which gets 1 point. So when you add up all the numbers, here's what you got. The Kentucky Wildcats come in at number one. How about this in the last 10 years? Did you win some games with this group? John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, Anthony Davis, Carl Anthony Towns. That's pretty good, huh? Throw in Eric Bledsoe, Devin Booker, Enes Kanter, De'Aaron Fox, and Jamal Murray. That'd be a pretty good roster. You'd probably win the Olympics with that roster. That's a pretty good group of guys. But coming in at number two is the Duke Blue Devils. Kyrie Irving, Kyrie, Brandon Ingram, Jason Tatum. At the beginning of the 2009 and 2019 stretch before Coach K really embraced one-and-dones, Duke wasn't producing as many draft picks. Looked to the one pick in 2009 and zero in 2010, a year that Duke won the title. But the Blue Devils picked up steam on the recruiting trail, starting with Irving, who was a top pick in 2011. Then they rode three freshmen who would be first-round draft picks, Jahlil Okafor, Justice Winslow, Tyus Jones, to the 2015 title. Flash forward to the past two drafts, and Duke has had four picks in each, six of those in the first round. Although some of Duke's top five picks, Jabari Parker, Okafor, Brandon Ingram, haven't exactly developed into superstars in the NBA, but there's no doubt in Coach K's ability to get guys drafted early. And then Kansas comes in at three, Carolina at four, Syracuse five, UCLA six, Arizona, Texas, Michigan, Washington round out the top 10. So it feels like the tide, you can go back even as far as Johnny Dawkins, Collegiate Player of the Year, was okay in the NBA. Danny Ferry was only okay in the NBA. He was a National Collegiate Player of the Year. The Tommy Amakers, you know, obviously Hurley, Leitner, those guys weren't nearly in the pros what they were in college. Now, Grant Hill was very good in the pros. His problem was he was just not healthy. Wasn't healthy at all, but he was a pretty good pro. When he was healthy in the pros, Grant Hill was a great player. The problem was he couldn't stay healthy. But that tide started to churn, even though Jay Williams got hurt, terrible accident, never really played again. But Elton Brand kind of helped that. You know, Trajan Lang didn't do a whole lot. Corey Maggette didn't do a whole lot. Who was the other guy? Who's the guy that played for the Miami Heat that Danny Ferry made the comments about? Remember the player that Danny Ferry made those comments about that ended up getting him fired? Was all said and done? That kid played at Duke too, right? Luol Deng. Yeah, Luol Deng. He played at Duke. So some of those guys did turn out to be pretty good players. Elton Brand was a very good player, you know. Shane Battier wasn't a great player, but he was a great leader, and he was an important piece on, you know, on a guy that, you know, if you wanted to try to help you win a championship, he seemed like he was the kind of guy to bring you into all that. But with some of the guys now that are in the league, I think that stigma of drafting Duke players is going away. And there's no doubt about the fact that you have three immensely talented Duke players in this draft. There's no doubting Zion. It wouldn't matter who picks number one. There's no franchise out there that wouldn't take Zion number one as the pick. And R.J. Barrett is not going past three or four. He ain't falling to eight or anything like that. He's too good a player. He's got too much upside. So you know he's going up really high, and he's considered to be one of the closest things to sure things, even though there's not really a sure thing in the NBA draft. And Cam Reddish has looked at a guy who goes, okay, why was he not better? He's got everything that you would look for in a basketball player, but he just wasn't as productive at times. Maybe that's youth. I don't know. But then again, Zion and R.J. Barrett were the same way as well. So there's a lot of Duke players that are in this draft that are high-caliber guys that certainly the Hawks are looking at. And I know I wouldn't be upset if they, you know, R.J. Barrett is the guy that I want. You know, if I could pick one of those guys, the guy I would want is R.J. Barrett. That would be my choice would be, can you get up to three and can you go get R.J. Barrett? If you can do that, I'd take all that. Now, Cam Reddish is a nice player too. I'm not 100% convinced that if you go to four or five, that's the guy that you take at four or five. But there's a lot of reports that believe either him or Jarrett Culver from Texas Tech, that's who the Atlanta Hawks are going to be targeting if they decide to move up. And a lot more scuttlebutt now about it's going to be maybe the number five pick, that potentially they may only have to give up 10 and 17 to get up to five, and they could pick 5 and 8. And maybe even worst case scenario is they pick 5 and 10. But they should potentially have enough to get where they need to go and still probably look at drafting 2 first-round picks. You know, I'm not going to be mad at pretty much anybody that they draft, even if they sit at 8 and 10 and wait to see if Hunter or somebody like that, you know, falls down to them. Because it's such a crapshoot. You know, like, it's so, you don't know what to expect. You know, Zion could flame out and be a bust. I don't think he will, but he could. Ja Morant could be a bust. I mean, that's just the way the league works, man, is that when you draft high, you know, it's the, what, Carmelo went 1, and who was the foreign player that went 2 to Detroit in that draft? Who was the guy that went right before Dwayne Wade in that draft? Right, when that draft, it was Carmelo, and then who was the guy for Detroit that got, yeah, Darko Milicic, and then Wade. So basically 2 Hall of Fame players and then Darko Milicic. So it happens in the NBA. You know, as the great Roddy Piper said, just when you think you have the answers, I change the questions. And that's exactly what the NBA draft is. It's such a crapshoot no matter where you pick. You can have the number 1 overall pick, and you may think it's going to all work out. I promise you, every number 1 draft pick that people grabbed a hold of, they thought that that was going to be the dude, right? There you go. Yeah, that's my guy right there. Oh, nice and slow, baby. I was asking if we could get a little Freddie Jackson since we're doing the 80s thing. He's got some really good songs, too. You know the thing about his songs, too? They're all like 10 minutes long, too. That's what's great about it. You put that song on, just let it play for a while. All right, you know what time it is when we get back. It's time for Chuckery to take his love TKO. We'll hand it off to that dopey millennial, Tommy Mott. Hot take Tommy, he's back. Sports Radio 910 The Game. I'm so glad we took the time to
look into each other's mind. We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.